Next on BYUSN, Cougar basketball escapes on the road at Utah in a rivalry game on Saturday night. Was the 5-point win good enough? And why was it so close? How about some football? Evan Johnson officially returning for the Cougars in 2026, which means no key returners are lost for Kalani Sitake and the Cougs. Do we expect BYU to be back in the Big 12 title game?
ESPN's Trevor Maddich breaks down Kelly Papinga's higher expectations for 2026 and Monday's national championship game next week. And new cornerbacks coach DeMario Warren makes his show debut to discuss his relationship with Kalani Sitake, Kelly Papinga, and why a single phone call changed his life.
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Happy Monday, January 12th. I am Spencer Linton, alongside a man who was partially responsible for BYU filling half of the Huntsman Center on Saturday night, Jerem Jordan.
Okay, we talked about how there was going to be a blue invasion at the Huntsman Center. I would be so embarrassed if half the Marriott Center was an opponent. BYU fans did a great job of going to the Huntsman Center, and for the first time outside of a gymnastics meet in a long time at the Huntsman Center, there was a packed crowd. They opened up the top, which, by the way, our producer Colton Potter went, apparently it's first come, first serve. There's no assigned seating in the upper bowl.
What? Like,
you just find your seats? What is this, Cinemark in 1998? It's interesting. Morgan Scally, the new head coach for the Utah Utes, was rolled out at halftime, and BYU fans made sure they were heard.
What he's doing with the culture here, okay, you're nuts. You watch this team play, they play tough, they play hard. Okay?
Let's go, Cougars! Let's go, Cougars! Let's go, Cougars!
What do you expect?
You shouldn't have to be asked to out loud the other team in your own gym. You shouldn't have to summon the muss, which, by the way, is it the muss or is it the sum? Because twice the flag went up backwards. Not once, but twice, to which Scott Westman tweeted, "Somebody once told me the world was gonna roll." Then I don't know, was this during during a media timeout? There was, instead of "we hit turbulence, we hit circumference."
Yeah, I believe that was put out by Joe Wheat.
Joe Wheat said, "we hit circumference." I don't know what's going on here, but a lot of weird. All I know is BYU fans were half the crowd, and BYU won the game.
Oh.
I thought it was a great showing by all. But the margin was too close. We played you guys. You guys have a G League roster, and we played you close. Losers talk about margin. Winners talk about winning. Remember that.
And to be fair to that statement, you discuss it when BYU is in that position as the losing team as well.
Yeah, I hate when we talk, we played them close.
Yeah.
Who cares? Win. You either win or you lose.
It was an interesting move, to say the least, to roll out your head football coach when you know.
You knew that would happen.
BYU fans,
you knew,
are filling up half of the venue. That is tough.
In spite of your prevention to do so via the tickets.
Oh, on that note.
A winning Saturday night in Salt Lake.
Yep, which means it's a winning Monday
again.
On BYU Sports Nation. Rise and shout. It's time for What's Trending.
Came up with a two-hand hammer!
It's a three-on-one. Riley, you third, lobs it up. Hammer home! Big time three, knocked it down! BYU wins it.
Ninth-ranked BYU has now won 12 straight games. They hold off Utah in Salt Lake City, 89-84. Entertaining, gut-wrenching at times game, and an agonizing watch for BYU fans at some points, but ultimately it's a victory for the Cougars and their first win at the Huntsman Center since 2021, which is crazy.
That is crazy.
After the game, head coach Kevin Young was joined by Richie Saunders and A.J. DeBonsa in the postgame press conference and spoke about this specific win.
We said we want to come up here and win this game for, you know, Richie, Kava, you know, J-Mac and Dawson, and I thought Richie and Cave as well in that game was probably the difference.
I've come up here and come up short in overtime, lost by one, lost by two. Like, to be able to finish this is, it's amazing.
I mean, Richie's will to win is just like nothing I've ever been around. We and he all wanted to get a win for him here his senior year. And, he's possessed, man, in a good way. He just wasn't going to lose, bottom line.
Boy, that was crazy. That was super hostile. That's probably like, besides my high school days, that rivalry, that's probably like the most hostile environment I've been in. That was really like a welcome to the Big 12 moment for me.
Well, based on AJ's reaction after the game when he was walking into the win cam, I think we understand how he feels about the rivalry.
He did a big U down. Can we get that eyesore of a background off next time? Put up a BYU one? Is that just me? Yeah.
Incredible. In so many ways, this game from start to finish and all the hoopla around it. BYU favored by 14.5, end up winning by 5. So Jerem was just winning the game. Enough for BYU.
Yes, it was. And here's why. It's a Big 12 road game against your rival. I know that BYU should win by more in that game. Utah was up for it. They played a great game. Terrence Brown, Don McHenry combined for 46. That was one shy of Richie and Rob for BYU. 47, by the way. They played great. They made a bunch of shots. BYU's free throws, that was an issue. BYU missed 10. They did attempt 8 more. They made 1 more. Same amount of threes made. 2 more shots made, plus 8 on the boards. Yes, this was – you play these type of games. You look at some of the best teams in BYU history. They played close games against opponents they should have beat a bunch. 1984, they go 13-0. They played some close games in conference against Hawaii and New Mexico and so on and so forth. It happens. I'm proud of BYU for going up there and winning. It was a hostile environment. There were 50-50 with BYU fans, but you just have to go and win because that was the Super Bowl for Utah. If they could pick off one team this whole year, they want BYU at home.
And they've done it at home they against BYU in recent years.
They have done it before, and BYU's really struggled up there. BYU got the dub. I'm proud of the Cougars for doing that. Richie Saunders, by the way, best game as a Cougar, in my opinion.
Ooh.
24 points, career-high 14 boards, 6 on offense. BYU needed those offensive rebounds.
Better than his games against Arizona State.
Absolutely. ASU stinks. So does Utah. But it's in a game. You needed those rebounds. And he hadn't won up there. That was personal. We just heard him talk about that. That was awesome. AJ had 20 again. Just 1 point in the final, 10-07. They were doubling him. That allowed Richie and Rob to get to the rim, get to the free throw line, that kind of thing. Rob Wright, by the way, you mentioned this on our call this morning. I like this. The closer for BYU in this game. 23 points, 6 assists, 1 turnover, game-high 38 minutes. By the way, he barely comes out of the game now. He'll come out for like 1 minute in each half. Rob made 3 of BYU's last 5 field goals, 8 of BYU's last 18 points.
You want to continue to double A.J. DiBonsa and then put some pressure on Richie Saunders? Guess who's open?
Go ahead.
It's Richie, Rob Wright the third.
Or Richie. Like, someone's going to be open. Or you, once Rob gets downhill, forget about it. He's getting a bucket or he's laying it off the cable. Or he's finding Richie. It's awesome. It's hard to stop.
The big three goes for 20-plus.
That said brig three, each. Just saying.
So the brig three is gaining momentum.
The triple combination.
The triple combination.
We'll figure out a proper nickname. Yeah.
But you need your big players or the brig three to show up and do their thing, and all three hit 20 or more again.
Mm.
Now, I'll add this little nugget. Late in the game, BYU throws in a zone defense by Kevin Young, and Utah's offense goes into like hyperventilation mode. Like, what do we do? Where do we go? It was wild to watch them go into dysfunction. They couldn't get into an organized set, shot clock violations. BYU's defense ratcheted down. I thought that was an incredible move by Kevin Young to do that because Utah, to their credit, they're using something called a ghost screen, which is you put a screen on a ball handler to force them into a one-on-one matchup with a BYU defender they want their guard on. So it kind of rotates.
It happens in the NBA a ton.
Yes, and Utah executed it beautifully. BYU made the move late, and I believe that was the difference in the game. Like, that's what allowed BYU to pull away in the end because Utah, they got out of rhythm in a hurry. I thought that was a great move, great coaching by Kevin Young, and execution by his players.
Tony Padilla tried to extend this game. Fortunately, did not. Wait, we have a foul. No, no, we don't. Let's get out of here. What are we doing? Come on.
How about this? We talked about all three of the big three going for 20-plus. Yep. At Jeff Borzello points out via ESPN Research, A.J. DiBonta is the first Division I freshman in the last 30 seasons to have 9 straight games of 20-plus points on 50% field goal shooting.
It's not just scoring. It's efficiency.
He's good when he shoots the ball. It's not just volume shooting.
Yeah. He can volume shoot next year in the NBA more. But he takes the right shots, man. I want him to shoot more threes. He didn't score much the last 10 minutes, right? But it wasn't a problem. Because we have not had a night where two of the big three have not been good, Spence. Two of the three always show up, and most of the time, all three do. It's awesome. It's hard to beat. Right now, BYU's 15-1, 3-0 in the Big 12. Certainly TCU and Texas Tech this week. Those are bigger tests than last week. And BYU continues to play really well.
Yes, and when you plug in somebody like Kaba Keita, who also has an impact on the game, in spite of getting this in foul trouble, didn't play as many minutes as he wanted to, but still, Kaba Keita making a difference against his former team. After the game, Kevin Young shared his favorite moment from Kaba during Saturday night's game.
Great. What I thought about Kaba, though, is when I try to take him out of the game, when he got a third foul, he's the quietest person on planet Earth until that moment. He's never yelled at me louder than he did in that moment, which was awesome. I loved it. So Beto's like, am I still checking in or not? No, you're not. Go sit down. So that was cool.
Kaba's quiet. No.
No, sit down.
Keep me in.
Beto, sit down.
Yeah.
I love that. While headband Kaba wasn't as explosive in the statistical categories as he has been in the previous games, he's worn his headband. You know he wore the headband for a reason in that game. And he still got after the
rim. I need to know when he's wearing it and why.
Come on.
Because it's been thrice, right?
Three times, three wins. And, yeah, I'm telling you what, his impact late in the game was monumental as well. Our question of the day is this. We just answered it. Was BYU basketball's 5-point win over Utah good enough? I know it was weird, but you win a road game against your rival where it's been difficult to win. Was it good enough? Jerem, start us off with responses.
At KW Jasmine, any win over Utah is good enough. The Huntsman games are always insane. We haven't won there much lately, so give me a 1-point win, and I'll be pumped. That's how I feel. Just win the game. Should BYU win by more? Sure. Do they get more credit for winning by more? By the way, it was a quad three game. Now it's a quad two game because close margin slash BYU's net is so good that it pulled Utah up. So that's good because who cares about quad three and four games?
Another quad two win for BYU. It's a road conference win. It's difficult to win Big 12 games on the road, and BYU's got two road wins already in conference.
Utah's net is the lowest in the Big 12. They are statistically the worst team in the Big 12. Go and beat them and move on with your life.
Yes. And I know there are things to clean up. Yeah, BYU missed a bunch of free throws. Not great. 60% from the free throw line?
Yeah.
Not great.
Don't miss 10 free throws.
Or a little over 60%, I'd say, but still.
AJ struggled from the line. He was missing front ends.
Yeah, Richie Saunders as well.
Okay, in a win, you go, I got to be better. Because at Texas Tech on Saturday, TCU in the house Wednesday, yeah, if you're in a close moment like that, that team might beat you in that situation. Mm.
Some critical turnovers in the second half as well. Like you can clean those things up.
Yeah, let's do it.
But still. Weigh in on X, Facebook, and Instagram. Was just winning enough for BYU basketball?
Massive news, as we mentioned from the Kelly Papinger interview, that he expected Evan Johnson back. Schmev, no C, just an H-M-E-V after the S. Running it back in 2026.
You don't say.
What does getting Schmev back mean for the BYU defense?
Well, first of all, we knew it. We knew that he was going to run it back, and he is. So great to see that announcement. This just means that BYU has their lockdown cornerback. They have their lockdown guy. It feels like it's going to be Schmev and Trey Alexander, and then we'll see exactly how it plays out after that. But you want your best defenders back in the game. You want the guy that wants to be on an island in the game, and you want your interceptions leader back on the team. 5 interceptions to lead BYU last season, and multiple of those in critical, critical scenarios. So excited that Evan Johnson is back to lead BYU's secondary and team up with those safeties. Goodness, Fale Tausatuwala, Raider Dumuni, Evan Johnson, Trey Alexander, It sounds like a secondary that BYU fans should be very excited about as they try and get to the next level in the Big 12. Just, it's another leader. It's more experience. It's swagger that BYU's defense needs. And a new defensive coordinator, Kelly Papinga, I cannot overstate how thrilled he is to have Evan Johnson back.
He's BYU's best cover corner, and that combination with Trey Alexander will form a super nice tandem. Perhaps another nickel in the portal would help them. Who knows? PFF, okay, some numbers to quantify Shmev's awesomeness. Not every player you can do this with, but let me give you some numbers. 32nd best coverage grade in the nation, 3rd in the Big 12. Among Big 12 corners, he allowed the lowest percentage of catches.
There you go.
44%. Tied 2nd in the nation among cornerbacks with 5 picks.
There's the 5.
By NFL passer rating against 10th in the nation among those who played at least 50% of snaps. And then he only allowed 2 penalties all year. I don't know that a BYU corner can be much better. He was outstanding, and he's coming back. I can't wait.
BYU unbelievably brings back each and every one of the key players they were hoping to retain.
Unbelievable retention number. Literally no one else in the country will do what BYU just did. Nobody.
You point to whatever reason you want to.
It's amazing.
But it starts,
Kalani,
it starts and ends with Kalani.
K-pop.
It starts and ends with the head ball
They
coach.
Do believe in K-pop. If they didn't like Kelly as the DC, they would have bounced. They would have gone somewhere else. Why did not a single player go to Michigan, by the way? That's incredible. I expected a couple to perhaps follow Jay Hill and Jarnero Guilford.
Did not happen.
Zero.
Did not happen.
I'm amazed by that.
I love
That's
the graphic
great.
That got posted of Evan Johnson after his announcement that literally said, number of players that followed Jay Hill to Michigan. And
his
it's
jersey.
Just Evan Johnson with the zero jersey on. Well played.
Love Jay, but I'm more happy about these BYU players wanting to be here. Speaking of, BYU had a dearth in the tight end spot. They needed to add somebody. They add USC transfer tight end Walker Lyons, the older brother of Ryder Lyons. Perhaps they get a play with each other after Ryder's mission. We'll see. 6'4", 235 from Folsom, 4-star. 6 catches, 259 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 2 seasons at USC, 2 years of eligibility. Do you expect Lyons to immediately step into Carson Ryan's role, and can he be what Carson Ryan was offensively?
That's a loaded, double-barreled question right there, so let's start with number one. Yes, he is the immediate replacement for Carson Ryan. This was at the top of the list of what BYU needed on offense, a tight end. Like, goodbye Carson Ryan, who was extremely impactful for BYU. He brought the tight end threat back to BYU in many ways with his 37 catches and 500 receiving yards.
It was 620.
Oh, 620. Sorry. It was
amazing,
right? It was 500 going into the bowl game.
The bowl game was a monster game.
Tack on the bowl game, 600 plus.
Yeah, dude.
Okay? So, to Carson's credit, he brought the tight end threat back to BYU, and now that is Walker Lyons' capability. I know Walker's numbers weren't huge at USC, but if you plug and play, I'm expecting an uptick. Now,
isn't that what Carson was at Utah a little bit, right?
Yes,
and then
same
he took
type
the
of deal. I'm not anticipating that Walker will necessarily have 600-plus yards receiving.
Make it 700.
But I do think he can catch 30 passes and get up over 400 yards receiving.
I'm with you, yeah.
Which I still think will be very impactful. I'd like the tight end to become more of a red zone target. BYU has several options in the red zone, notably a running quarterback who's very physical, Bear Bachmeyer, and you bring back L.J. Martin.
Pretty good.
You got Parker Kingston, who they like to use on the edges as well and in the slot. So it's tougher, but I would like to see the tight end in the end zone a little bit more, and maybe Walker Lyons can do that, but he is the plug-and-play guy right now.
I do think he'll have more receiving touchdowns than Carson Ryan had. Carson had 3. I think Walker has 5
okay.
plus. The 620 was a massive number.
It's crazy.
I mean, but Walker's coming in here to be the guy. And not every position do you want sort of the one-year or two-year thing. This is actually okay, though, because you know you're the guy when you walk in, and you know you're going to get a certain amount of targets.
You are the dude.
A certain amount of confidence, certain amount of volume. That's why you come here. He's coming here, and I can't wait to talk to him at some point about, like, yeah, do you want to play with Ryder? Like, what's the situation there? Slash just the one that got away at BYU wanted him. He famously has in recruiting the picture with the stuffed cougar. You have a similar photo, which we probably should bust out side by side at some point.
No shame.
I'm excited to have Walker Lyons at BYU. And as many of you said, Lyons and Tiger and Bear is official. Whew. Oh, my.
Carson Ryan, 45 catches. Yeah, you tack in the bowl game, the 8 catches for 120 in the bowl game.
Fantastic.
I mean, even if Carson has, or if Walker has 37 and 500, including a bowl, fantastic.
That's great.
Fantastic.
Dennis Pitt is like, I'd like double that. Number 9 men's basketball will look for its 13th straight win against TCU, which is not a school record, by the way, the 12th, on Wednesday. Pre-game coverage begins at 10 Eastern on BYU TV, BYU Radio. Game tips at 11 Eastern, a little later, on ESPN2 and BYU Radio. Sean Farnham on the call.
Go. Still can't get over. BYU's tight ends group had 22 catches all of the season before. Carson at 45. Up next, Maddox Monday with ESPN's Trevor Maddox. How does he feel about the Kelly Papinga hire? And how does BYU take the next step? Are they going to be the Big 12 champs? This is BYU SN.
Jay with the TD!
Kelly Papinga, the new defensive coordinator.
Intercepted by Evan Johnson!
Nobody left. That tells me that BYU is fired up about this.
The Pro Bowl next year because we're running it back and we're going for a natty.
We are live at Studio B. This is your day-to-day BYU Sports play-by-play. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jerem Jordan. It is a Monday. It is still technically college football season, so you know what that means. It's Maddox Monday with ESPN college football insider, analyst, and national champion Trevor Maddox. Trevor, great to have you back on the show. How you feeling with only one game left in the college football season to go?
You know, I feel like, Spencer, that as great as this season has been, I'm not satisfied yet. And this seems, it's shaping up to be just a fantastic national championship game. And I think that'll be the perfect bow on top of one of the most dramatic seasons we've ever seen.
What kind of a shot does Miami have? Because Indiana looks absolutely dominant, perhaps the greatest team we've ever seen in college football. Who knows?
Yeah, I think Miami does have a good chance because their defense is great. And the way their offense has been playing down the stretch of the season by protecting the ball and playing to the strength of that defense, I think they've absolutely got a chance. You can't beat Indiana's offense by just getting after Fernando Mendoza. And that's what people think of when they think of this game. They think of the Miami pass rush against the passing of the Heisman-winning quarterback throwing to receivers who will be in the NFL next year. And that's an important matchup. But Miami's defensive front will have to earn the right to run the passer because Indiana is very much a run-first team. And so, I mean, you look at the two playoff games, they threw it 36 times with the Heisman-winning quarterback. 36 passes, 90 runs. Think about that. And that was partly because they got way out ahead, but this Indiana team is not of the type that will take their foot off the gas and just try to take the air out of the game. They want to smash you. And so they run because they can, because it's working. And so Miami will have to stop the run first, and then they have to deal with Fernando Mendoza and those receivers.
Trevor, can I just say that it's so refreshing and wonderful for BYU to not be the only college football team in America that is being accused and charged of being too old. Welcome, Indiana.
Yeah, you know what? Old age and treachery will be youth and enthusiasm every time. And so, yeah, you got a lot of young players. But I tell you what, if Indiana doesn't have all the 4- and 5-star recruits. SportsCenter put up a graphic the other day. I took a picture of it, actually, when I was backstage waiting to come on for my segment on college football. They said that Indiana had 8 combined 4- and 5-star recruits on the team. And the teams that they beat, the big blue blood teams, had over 40. Two of them had over 50 in terms of Ohio State and Alabama, and now Miami with over 40 4- and 5-star recruits on those rosters, 8 for Indiana. So how do they do it? They do it with a combination of playing really clean football. I mean, they don't make the mistakes that cost you games. More games are lost than they are won because of mistakes, right? And so they do that really well. But the other is that Kurt Cignetti has brought in players that don't just match his schemes. They also match his culture. And you need to be willing to be coached hard, or you can't play for Cignetti. I mean, if you're one of those prima donnas who never had learned how to work really hard in practice and be coached hard because your parents intimidated your youth coaches all your life, you can't play at Indiana. But what that does is bring in the right kinds of guys that are then able to get the most out of each other. And it's great. It's a similar similar culture at BYU, where the right guys are brought in, not just to be able to fit the schemes, but to fit the culture of BYU. And it's one of the reasons that these two programs have been so successful the last 2 years.
For reference, I have BYU with 24 stars on next year's roster as of now. So no 5 stars, but more than Indiana.
Well, Indiana better watch out then, because here comes BYU, right?
We hope.
I think the culture has a lot to do with that. And the fact that you can achieve all your goals at BYU has a lot to do with those higher regarded recruits giving BYU a closer look that maybe they wouldn't have in the past when BYU was an independent.
Kelly Papenga is officially hired since we last chatted. What's your reaction to his hire? And then he adds DeMario Warren as the cornerbacks coach and passing game coordinator.
Yeah, I love both of those additions. Coach Warren is terrific as a coach. He understands defense. That's why he's a coordinator now, passing game coordinator. He's also a phenomenal recruiter. I mean, it's a really, really great addition. And then Kelly Papenga as defensive coordinator is just perfect. It's just perfect. I mean, he has served as co-defensive coordinator under Bronco Mendenhall in Virginia, and he was a coach under Bronco Mendenhall at BYU for a long time as well, and that's important because of how Bronco looks at defense. He's one of the brightest defensive minds in college football. Now he's got Jay Hill and Kalani Sitake, who's also one of the brightest defensive minds in college football, and Gary Anderson, who is really the wind beneath the wings of this program in a lot of ways, also fully understands the concepts, the defense of Jay Hill, along with Coach Sitake and along with Coach Papenga. All of them, I think, point to the fact that you've got an experienced hire from within that the players know and respect and understand as an outstanding, not just position coach, but coordinator, special teams coordinator before. And BYU special teams have been borderline elite. They've been fantastic over the years that Coach Papenga has been the coordinator on that phase of the ball. And then elevating to defensive coordinator, you don't have to wonder if there's going to be big changes. You don't have to wonder if a new guy coming in understands what we do best. Nope. Coach Papenga knows those things. Now, he'll put his own stamp on it, and that's important. And it will be his defense, not Jay Hill's. But I think the support around him will help. And I think the fact that he's so respected by the players is maybe the most important thing.
Trevor Maddich is back for another Maddich Monday on BYU Sports Nation. Okay, Trevor, BYU loses key starters on defense, notably Tanner Wall and Jack Kelly, who both have NFL aspirations and are getting ready for such, along with Jay Hill and Gennaro Guilford. So when you consider those departures and now what BYU has rallied, amazingly, to bring back the majority of their key players and then put this new staff in place, what's a realistic expectation for this BYU defense moving forward?
You know, this defense has a chance to be everything that it has been. I mean, having Raider DeMooney back, having Fale Salutau, I can't ever say his name correctly.
Fale Tau-Satuala.
Satuala. Yeah, sorry about that. I don't mean to be disrespectful with that. It's just that my brain gets stuck there sometimes. But I pointed him out in these conversations and on halftimes of games about how he has been absolutely devastating from a standpoint of making plays from that safety position to have Isaiah Glasker back and Keanu Tanuvasa back on defense. You've got a core of not just experience, but a core of stars to then build around going forward. And so I think having those guys back is enormous, because this BYU team for the last couple of years has been very much led by the defense. It's been enabled by the defense as the offense has grown in different ways. And ultimately, look at how Indiana's winning. They're playing stout defense. They're running the ball. And when it's time to pass it, they do it at the highest level. BYU is setting up to be able to do that just as well as they have the last couple of years with this core of players coming back.
How does BYU get into the playoff next year? Because certainly the next step is winning the Big 12. But Trevor, it's just one game if you can get back to it, and it's probably Texas Tech. But certainly the NIL and the amount of money that they are pouring in is not going to be matched by BYU, although BYU is very competitive in that space. Texas Tech, you could argue, is number one probably in that space in the country. So how does BYU get to the playoff? And if they don't go through Texas Tech, how do they get in a situation where they're not the second team out next year with a roster loaded with guys that are all back?
Well, they need to lay waste to people more often. That would help. I think the committee looked at how many times they came back from double-digit deficits, and coming back is harder than just blowing a team out to begin with. But if the committee's looking for an excuse to elevate a different team into the playoff than BYU, they will look at that. And so it would be good for them to start fast in these games and then get faster as the game goes on and don't have to make so many desperate comebacks. That's important. You know, from a non-conference standpoint, I haven't looked at their schedule next year, but it used to be that BYU had to schedule as difficult games as possible as an independent in order to be able to have a chance to be looked at. Now, with the way the Big 12 has developed so much respect in its new look and its new lineup, you know, I think that a non-conference win against a quality team is important. But when you've got Texas Tech and Utah and TCU and Iowa State, and so many Kansas State, for goodness sake, so many outstanding, solid programs in the conference. They need to take care of business where they are and then get maybe some love non-conference. But this last year, the non-conference schedule wasn't tremendously difficult, but it was tremendously necessary to develop the true freshman, Bear Bachmeier, into the quarterback he became as Big 12 play started. So what do they need to do for next season? Well, they need to win, of course, but now the way that they win is going to be important too. Texas Tech just crushed everybody. And they made the playoff by virtue of the fact that they were, you know, conference champion, one of the top five straight conference champions. But had BYU beaten them in the Big 12 championship game, I still think Texas Tech would have been in because of what they did to everybody. They just crushed everybody. BYU needs to elevate to the point to where they're doing that as well.
Trevor, there is a newer proposal for the college football playoff and potential expansion that is centered around the Big Ten Conference. Notably, the Big Ten says if the SEC will at some point support expansion to 24 teams in a few years, then they're happy to go to 16. What do you read into the idea of, hey, we'll go to 16 if we can get to 24 in 3 years, that according to the Big Ten?
You know, 5 years ago, I would have said that that's nuts because you would just add teams that are going to get crushed early in the playoff, and it really wouldn't affect who would be the final four. But NIL and the transfer portal have changed all that. Talent has been spread around. I mean, you look at the final four this year, not a single blue blood among them, or at least traditional blue blood. The Alabamas and Georgias and Ohio States and Michigans aren't in the final four this year. And three of those four, by the way, didn't even play in their own conference championship game. And all four of them have transfer quarterbacks. And so I think you're seeing the dilution of talent into more places instead of being stockpiled by the usual suspects, by the traditional blue bloods, who would be the ones there at the end, no matter how many teams you put in the playoff. And when you look at what happened with this playoff, I mean, BYU and Notre Dame, absolutely playoff-worthy teams. Texas finished with three losses, but one of those was their opener at Ohio State. Had they not played Ohio State in that opener, had they played the Ohio Bobcats, for goodness sake, and no disrespect to them, but if they had played less of a national power and they finished 10-2 instead of 9-3, Texas is probably in. And in a 16-team playoff, they would have been in. You know, Vanderbilt, 10-2 SEC team. These are teams that would be worthy of being in a 16-team playoff, right? Because of, because of the spreading out of talent because of NIL and transfer portals. So I guess that all rounds around to say if they go to 16, it's not like it would have been if it were 16 10 years ago. Now you've got maybe 12 of those teams that would have a legitimate chance of going deep into the playoff.
The great Trevor Maddich, always delivering on BYU Sports Nation. Brother, we can't wait for the national championship and to talk to you about that result as well.
Yes, and apologies to Faletau Satuala. I apologize for getting his name messed up. That's important to me, just to be respectful of that. And so I look forward to talking to you guys after the national championship game. We'll see what happens.
You got it. The great Trevor Maddich. And frankly, look, it shows us that you're human, okay? You're not perfect.
Some people have wondered if you are. Now we know. Thanks, Chip.
All right.
BYU Gymnastics. Best of Utah meet tonight. Spence is busy on the gymnastics trail. Friday night, Monday night. Do you have another one this weekend, too?
Yeah, so 3 and 8 days.
9 Eastern, ESPN Plus. It's the Utes and Aggies and Cougs. Let's go.
Still to come, Puka Nacua, monster game in the first round of the NFL playoffs. Plus, Recapping impressive weekends from BYU women's basketball, gymnastics, and men's volleyball, all in headlines on BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to Studio B. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jerem Jordan. And these are your Monday headlines sponsored by BYU Continuing Education, inspiring lifelong learning for Cougar fans everywhere.
In front of a crowd that was half rooting for them, half not. Number 9 men's basketball beat Utah 89-84 Saturday night in Salt Lake City to improve to 15-1, 3-0 in the Big 12. For the third time this season, the Brig 3 of A.J. DeBonta, Rich Saunders, Rob Wright scored 20-plus in the same game. Up next, BYU hosts TCU late Wednesday night at the Marriott.
We hit circumference! BYU defensive back.
Sound the same?
BYU defensive back Evan Johnson announced on social media over the weekend he's running it back at BYU for the 2026 season. He led the Cougars with 5 interceptions in 2025, one of the best cornerbacks in the Big 12. BYU also announced the signing of USC transfer tight end Walker Lyons, older brother to quarterback signing Ryder Lyons. Walker comes to BYU with 2 years of eligibility remaining after spending 2 seasons at USC.
Cougars in the NFL playoffs, highlighted by Puka Nacua, caught 10 passes, 111 yards, scored 2 total touchdowns for the Rams in a 34-31 dramatic win over the Panthers. Puka and the Rams play Dub Bears next Sunday. Fred Warner and the Niners, Kyrus Tong and the Patriots also advance to the divisional round.
BYU women's basketball wins on the road at Houston 79-64 on Saturday to improve to 3-2 in Big 12 play. The Cougars had 5 players score in double figures, led by Delaney Gibbs, team-high 19 points. Up next, BYU hosting number 16 Baylor on Saturday. Huge game.
Gymnastics upset number 17 Oregon State in its season opener Friday night at the Marriott Center, scoring a 195-675. BYU back in action tonight in the Best of Utah meet at the Maverick Center. Coverage begins at 9 Eastern on ESPN+.
8th-ranked BYU men's volleyball opens their season with 2 wins over St. Francis, sweeping both matches. Trent Mosier, he's back. Total of the team-high 25 kills across the 2 matches. Up next, the Cougars host UC San Diego on Friday and Saturday night. After the break, new cornerbacks coach DeMario Warren makes his BYUSN debut, goes one-on-one with Jerem to discuss why he wanted to coach with Kalani Sitake and K-pop. This is BYUSN.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by BYU Continuing Education, inspiring lifelong learning for Cougar fans everywhere.
Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation. Who is DeMario Warren, BYU's new cornerbacks coach and passing game coordinator? How did a single phone call change his life? And how his family dynamic tells us already how he's going to be a great cornerbacks coach. Here's my conversation with Coach Warren from this morning. All right, DeMario, what's it been like to join BYU's coaching staff so far?
It's been awesome. It's been hectic, obviously, with the transfer portal, trying to get down here and get some guys in, but it's been awesome. Kalani's made the transition as easy as possible. K-pop's kind of showing me around the town, showing me where to go in Provo. So it's been good. Everybody's nice and welcoming, so pleasure to be here.
And it's probably nice because the people and the place aren't completely unfamiliar to you. What are some of the connections you've had previously?
Obviously worked with K-pop at Boise State, worked with Justin Inna at Southern Utah, worked with Fessy Sitake at Southern Utah. I've known Kalani for years, just going to camps, the All-Poly camp, high school camps. So I've been very familiar with the program and all the people that have been in it, Ed Lamb and Janero Guilford and Jay Hill. And so I've known a lot about the program, but now it's fun to kind of see what the inner working is and what makes BYU so special.
We go back to 2016, and it's year one for Kalani Sitake. It's year one for you at Southern Utah, and you guys actually tangle in a game. What do you recall from that?
I remember the 4th and 20 or something, 4th and long, and they threw a touchdown, which kind of blew the game open. I remember not getting a 4th down on the first drive of the game. We think we went for it on 4th and 2, about midfield. So those are probably the two. I always remember the bad stuff more than the good stuff, but those are 2 things that kind of pop out my head.
That's right a away. True coach. There was so much good. Be like, that one play. 10 years later, could you have envisioned being in this seat?
No, I mean, my career has never really gone that way. I didn't expect to be a football coach when I came out of high school or came out of college and did that. Didn't expect to be a D coordinator, a head coach. Didn't expect to go to Boise. So this is I'm just trying to do the best job I can at the current job I have. Make myself valuable, make the people around me better. And so once in a while, another opportunity comes up that my family and I can't turn down. So I'm just grateful for Kalani, for the opportunity, and grateful for my wife and family that are excited to make this move.
DeMario Warren is on BYU Sports Nation. So what did you want to do if you weren't going to be a football coach?
I was going to be a basketball coach. I coached high school basketball throughout college. So I kind of got into it.
While you were a running back at UC Davis?
Yeah. So
how did you have time for that?
It was the coach made the practices at night, so late at night, so I could drive down from Davis back to my hometown in Fairfield. And so I was able to coach for, I think, 4 years, coach high school basketball. And so I had a blast. And that's what I thought I was going to be a high school basketball coach the rest of my life.
Did you play high school basketball, I assume?
Yes.
Point guard,
shooting guard. Yeah, yeah.
You still got it? Can you still shoot?
We'll see. My wife's way better at basketball than I am.
Did she play too?
Yeah, she played. She averaged probably 20. I probably averaged 11. So
nice. Did she play in college or high school?
She kind of followed me. She could have. She definitely could have.
She could have.
She could have.
Yep.
But she
That's
wanted
awesome.
To kind of move on, get a job, and do that. And then when I went to coach football, she ended up going back to school and. She got a master's in accounting, so she's still an accountant.
That's a proper degree.
Oh,
that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, she's.
You and I dabble in sports. Yeah. That's a real degree.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, she's pretty amazing.
That's awesome. Okay, you're playing running back at UC Davis. You're thinking you're going to be a high school basketball coach. How'd you get into coaching in football?
So I hurt my knee my junior year. I was starting running back going into the season. Really excited about the year, and then 2 weeks before the season, I hurt my knee. And I had two freshmen behind me. I could play, but I wasn't really healthy. So I was going for third downs, things like that. But I had two freshmen behind me, and so I helped those guys out. And then a guy by the name of Rich Scangarella that ended up coaching in the NFL took the job at Southern Utah with Ed Lamb. And he said, hey, he called me on December 22nd. I'll never forget it. He called me. I had a year left to play football. So he was kind of beating around the bush, asking me weird questions. I'm like, what's going on? You never call me. Like, what's really happening? He said, well, I'm taking a job at Southern Utah. I want you to be my running backs coach. And so I called my wife. She was working at Safeway, the grocery store, and she did not like that. So I said, how do you feel about moving to Cedar City? She was like, where is that at? And I said, well, we played them a couple weeks ago. It was the place I said I'll probably never go back to. It was that cold place that I was telling you about. She said, sounds good to me. If you want to be a coach, let's go try it out. And so we were going to make $10,000. I figured it was more than my scholarship.
Not a month, the year.
So we ended up taking a leap of faith. Three days later, Rich Scangarella calls me and said, I'm going back to Davis. So I think you have a job. You should probably call Ed Lamb and see. So I call Ed and he said, no, I liked you on the phone. I want to bring you out still in coach your running backs.
One phone call got you the job.
One phone
call. How about that?
So it was lucky. To be honest, it was lucky. Coach Lamb took a leap of faith on me. And I didn't want to let him down for taking that opportunity on me. Someone that doesn't know what he's doing. I ended up coaching DBs that first year because our D coordinator left and they had a spot open. So he just took a leap of faith on me. And so biggest thing for me, the 8 years I coached with him was just not letting him down, making sure he didn't regret that decision.
We got to know Ed here and we loved Ed. We called him the cyborg because he was emotionless. Just, I need to do the job. He's great. Doing a nice job at Northern Colorado with Preston Hadley and those guys. Okay, so you're at SEU. And I've been struck by this, looking at most of the BYU staff the last couple of years, a lot of FCS connections, specifically Southern Utah. There's some Utah Tech in there and Weber State and so on and so forth. What is it about that level and cutting your teeth there that helps you get to this point and be successful?
You have to develop. You have to go evaluate because you're not going to get the 4 stars, 5 stars, 3 stars. So you got to find guys that have potential to be good. And then you got to coach your butt off to make sure that they can continue to get better. And I think that's the biggest thing about FCS is you're going to develop guys. You're going to make them better. And so by the time you get to this level, you have some great practice at evaluations. You got great practice at developing. And it gives you an opportunity to just kind of, again, cut your teeth and learn and grow when there's not a ton of eyes on you.
After SEU, you're at Boise State. Kelly Papping is there. That's where that kind of relationship, I think, forms. Once he gets the job and he talks to you, what's that conversation like and thought process for you of, should I take this opportunity now that there's an opening at BYU?
Yeah, him and Gennaro actually called me because Gennaro, when it first happened, was not all in on Michigan. And me and Gennaro is probably my best friend in coaching. So we were talking about it, and they're telling me how great of a place it is, and I'm like, well, I like the place I'm at, and our guys are awesome, and Coach Danielson's an amazing head coach, and so they just kind of presented the opportunity, presented the team they had coming back, presented the the structure that Kalani has in place here for families and those things. So that had me intrigued. And then when Kalani first called me and sold me on the vision of the program, the vision of the family time and those things, that was something that my wife and I really cling to. We want to continue to grow our relationship. We've been together for 23 years, but I climbed the ladder really fast, going from an assistant to a D coordinator to a head coach. And a lot of that sacrificed family time. And I got five kids. And so
five kids.
So nice. It was that was something that was important to us. And we wanted to see what that was like in person, live it, and see if that's something that can be sustainable. And so that's what we were excited about. And they laid it all out there for us. And after a lot of prayers and a lot of restless nights, we made the decision to come to BYU.
Family, prayer, that all lines up here. That all connects. So we love that stuff. What are the ages of your kids?
All over. So we got a three-year-old boy. He's the handful. He's running around, sprinting, jumping off things. We got a seven-year-old boy that is getting into sports a little bit. 12-year-old daughter that is getting big into softball. 16-year-old daughter is about to graduate high school a year early, so they got to stay out there for the semester. But she's
at 16?
At 16.
Wow.
She's a book. She likes to write books and things like that. So, and then I have a 21-year-old that is running track at Boise State. So, 3 to 21, and yeah, my wife didn't want two kids in diapers at the same time, so I guess we did that.
Wide swath. Kalani can talk to you about it, right? Yeah, I got a 12-7-1, so I'm with you. Yeah,
you go,
similar age range as well. Okay. Massive news over the weekend. Evan Johnson says, hey, I'm coming back. Trey Alexander is back. That group, specifically the cornerbacks, those two, and the depth there. I know Kelly Papinga talked about, hey, we still have two Scholies we're looking for. Those two, though, real special. What does it mean to have those two back for this defense?
It's awesome because this is going to be my first year in the defense. So, and again, I respect the heck out of the coaches that left. So they got a great foundation. So really it's my job to learn the foundation, learn what they know, learn what they're comfortable with, and then how can I make that better with my experience? And so huge for two guys that have played a lot that can probably articulate what they like to do. If it was two younger guys, they would probably be like, I really don't know. But with Smev and Trey, like those guys are going to be able to have some ideas and things that they want to get better at. And I think I've done corners for the last 4 years. So obviously I like how I do coach the corners, but I'm also flexible. I want to make sure that they do the things that they do well and then give them some tools so they can be more successful.
Trey's probably your number one recruiter and maybe on the team in terms of how vocal and ambitious he is, which is really fun. What's it been like to try and recruit? Obviously those two open scholarships, but also there's some good talent in the portal that has visited BYU, and you guys are hoping to land some good guys.
Yeah, it's hectic. The portal opened during my whole decision-making process. So I was recruiting for Boise State, trying to figure out what I was going to do. Then I made the move, and I got down here on Friday, and the last day was Sunday to recruit. So a lot of guys had trips set up. So it's been hectic, but honestly wanted to call the corners first and foremost at BYU to make sure that they knew I was here in town and that I'm here if they need anything. So that was more important than recruiting anybody else knew. We got a good room. I want to make sure those guys know that they're supported. And then just trying to reach out and do some speed dating and see who fits here.
That's what it is now, right?
So it's been fun. Got to talk to a lot of people. Got to work close with Justin and Dave and Pop and kind of see how that all works in a stressful situation. So next period when we have a lot more time to plan and things, it'll go a lot smoother because I know how these guys react when the rubber meets the road.
Listen, you have five kids from age 21 to 3. I know you can handle this group. You'll be just fine with the corners. Welcome to BYU, DeMario, and nice to meet you, man.
Nice to meet you, too. Thanks for having me.
DeMario Warren on BYU Sports Nation. We wrap up today's show with a rise and shout-out to two BYU football legends getting their respective calls to be mission presidents. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. BYU Sports Nation is brought to you by PACS, healthcare careers built for victory.
Our question of the day was BYU basketball's 5-point win over Utah good enough? Our elite voice of the day presented by PACS, healthcare careers built for victory from at Call Freestone, who says, a win is a win. It's good for us to play close games. We want to peak in March anyway, not early January.
Well, and BYU's playing Utah in 12 days again.
Can't wait for the home game. Whew. Today's Rise and Shout Out presented by Mountain America, official credit union, and BYU Athletics.
New mission leaders, used to be called mission president. Tom and Lori Hommel. Oakland, San Francisco mission starting July 1st for 3 years. Amazing. Love and it. Robbie Bosco and his wife Karen in Columbus, Ohio. Congratulations.
It's good to have some BYU Blue in Columbus. Our thanks to today's guests, Trevor Maddich and DeMario Warren.
There will be some in Ann Arbor too, I guess. Sorry to Dennis.
For Jeremy, I'm supposed to shout out to Jim Yusevich. Go Cougs!